is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Ethiopia and the victory of Adwa dinner held most recently in these last hours. An attendee here to report to us not only on the success of the dinner in Washington, D.C., but also to update us on the largest land war on the planet Earth right now, the civil war in Ethiopia, the Horn of Africa at risk. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Gregory, a very good evening to you. A celebration in D.C., a civil war in Ethiopia. What can you tell us about the challenge between the Prime Minister Abiy and the group called FANO, the large coalition of opposing forces called FANO? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the victory of Adwa dinner, just to get that taken care of, it was to celebrate the victory over the invading Italian forces at Adwa in 1896 by Emperor Menelik. And the communist government since 1974 have been reluctant to promote that because it's a symbol of unification and Ethiopian history. So that's done in Washington every year, and now it's being done independently in Ethiopia as well. And it's particularly timely. It was a somber yet joyous celebration of Ethiopians saying, well, we can do it again. And they were celebrating that, but there was a great deal of solemnity because of the news coming out to almost all of the expatriate families who were at this dinner, which was organized by the Ethiopian Crown Council under Prince Hermias Haile Selassie, in Washington. So there was a lot of discussion and an attempt by Prince Hermias to basically ensure that people's emotions didn't run away with themselves, because there's a huge amount of pro and anti Abiy sentiment in the expatriate community. The war itself is definitely progressing to an interesting stage. Yes, you've got the four FANO groups, mainly out of the Amhara region, and they have been gaining strength. They've been engaging in very, very punishing land conflicts with government forces. Government has used air power, has used a significant amount of drone warfare as well. They've got drones or unmanned combat aerial vehicles from Turkey, Iran, the People's Republic of China, and Russia. But the ones that have been working have been the Turkish Bayraktar TB2s, which were very effective. However, even though the Ethiopian government has five of those and they've ordered another, I think, three or four, they are still not making any headway against the FANO groups or these other groups from around the rest of the country who are literally resisting the government and are very, very anti-Abiy. Now, the details are sketchy because the government has a very effective lockdown on information moving in and out of the country, but I've been getting a lot of calls from various people, and some of them coming out to Djibouti or over to Dubai to make calls and so on. We know it's a very fluid situation, but what was the most telling thing was in the last few days, Prime Minister Abiy himself called for a national dialogue to resolve differences. That is really seen as a sign of weakness on the part of Dr. Abiy, because until now he has just been accustomed to suppressing opposition with a fair degree of ruthlessness, and that has not worked out. And in fact, huge numbers of government forces are defecting literally on a daily basis to the FANO and other groups and taking their equipment with them and the like. So that's very, very significant. But the admission of weakness by Prime Minister Abiy is a really telling point, which indicates that the government itself feels that it doesn't have a lot of time. Abiy has been reaching out unusually, by the way, to traditional leaders and the traditional religious leaders in the country. And this is only a short while after he was using his forces to physically attack and arrest leaders of the Ethiopian Tewahedo Orthodox Christian Church, the main church in the country, which is the the church of at least half of the population of the country. So basically, Abiy is now trying to reverse that. The reality is that Dr. Abiy calling for a national dialogue is a sign of weakness. Right. What the only way we can get the dialogue going is if there's an independent call for a dialogue, and it would have to be out of the country. It wouldn't be credible either if the opposing militia forces, the FANOs, and their disparate leadership called for it, because they too would be seen to be having an agenda. So what needs to happen if there's going to be any calming of this situation is for that dialogue to occur in a neutral spot, whether it's Dubai or Geneva or the like. Frankly, I think the any credible independent source that would be respected by the Ethiopians would be the Ethiopian crown, supported by traditional leaders.
Gregory, what's life like in Addis Ababa now? Is it a siege town with shortages? Do they have supplies? Do people gather there? Are there large groups camping out?
Well, yes, there are. The government is trying to make it a haven, but it's not doing a very good job of it. What we're seeing is that the opposition people can infiltrate the city relatively easily, and they've been painting graffiti messages on a lot of the walls around the city in recent weeks. So that's, in other words, dispiriting to the government. There have been attempts by the Oromo population to ensure that they claim Addis Ababa, which is on territory now ostensibly belonging to Oromia or the Oromo people. And they're saying, you know, we'll never give up Addis Ababa. And of course, the other groups, the Amhara, the Tigrayans and so on, are saying, well, this is a national capital. It's always been a national capital since Menelik II founded it in the 1890s. So basically, it's yes, it's a siege town. There is a lot of concern. I am getting calls out from senior government officials who want to talk about how they can start a dialogue with the opposition on the one hand, or basically how can they make sure that if the thing falls apart rapidly, they're not blamed along with Prime Minister Abiy, or they just want to get out with their families.
What does Abiy want? What are his goals? To remain in power? Certainly he can see that the factionalism is rampant everywhere. How does he answer that?
Well, he has doubled down on his almost messianic view that he is going to be the only leader of the country. He's doubled down on his suppression of the Amhara and Afar people. He's now trying to restart the animosity between the Tigrayan and Amhara population to get the TPLF, the old Tigray Popular Liberation Front, which is the Marxist group, to go back and start attacking the Amhara. That's not happening. In fact, the Amhara and the Tigrayan populations have largely got a common cause against the Oromo, and of course, Prime Minister Abiy is the head of the Oromo Party and claims to be all Oromo. He's in fact half Oromo.
Does Abiy have communication with African Union or with the EU or with the OSCE? Is there dialogue at some level from outside?
No. OSCE is not in connected with this. EU has zero influence there. The Italian government has attempted to reassert some influence, which is ironic given the fact that they invaded Ethiopia twice and were defeated twice by the Ethiopians. The African Union, of course, is headquartered in Addis Ababa, and that has not been effective in doing literally anything, really. In fact, it hasn't done anything really since it was converted from the Organization for African Unity to the African Union under Gaddafi and Nelson Mandela, you know, some decades ago, a decade or two ago. But the reality is that the African Union could assist if it had unity and will. I don't think that they're going to be the body to do the kind of national dialogue, although support from the African Union or endorsement from the African Union would be beneficial to that. But the African Union itself has proven that it is a failing organization in the region, much like the Arab League is for the Horn of Africa.
Just so a thought, though, we see in other parts of Africa, I'm thinking of the Sahel, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, but there are other states we could talk to. There's this trend to go away from democracy and towards strongman, which is what Abiy looks like. Is that how we should regard Ethiopia, as falling in with the trend, the trans-African threat trend?
Not really, because his trajectory was determined by the two previous communist governments. Firstly, the Derg in 1974 when they came in, and then in 1990 when Millis Zenawi and the TPLF came in. They were already strongman governments. There's not a trend towards away from democracy. It's, you know, the trend away from democracy in Ethiopia began with the coup against Emperor Haile Selassie in 74. But the reality is that there is no external power with sufficient prestige or authority to induce African countries to abandon this course of military correction, if you like, of governments. It's not that they're necessarily anti-democratic, most of these coups. It's that they have tired of the so-called democratically elected governments becoming absolutely corrupt and autocratic and perpetuating themselves in power with the aid of foreign governments, that the military has said, well, the only way back to freedom, if you like, or an equitable society is to overthrow these blatantly corrupt civilian governments. So, and of course, then the military governments tend to fall into this similar patterns, but it's not that they're necessarily anti-democratic, whereas the civilian governments tend to use the terminology of democracy or elections when they have no intention of maintaining the spirit of democracy.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're going to stay in the Middle East, and we're going to an airstrike in Damascus and its significance for the larger war that everyone fears in the Middle East. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.